Last time we discussed the concept of a woman changing the status from Tumah to Tara, and there are three things that are necessary in order to create that status change. Number one, Hefsek Tara, to get the establishment that the Dam stopped. Number two, Zainatim, 7 clean days, which need beditos to make sure that she's Tahara, and also the minhag of wearing bedadim levanim during that time as well. All that really leads up to number four, the most important part of her effecting a change from Tumah to Tara is going to the mikvah, Tevila. Tevila has to be done at night, which means a woman is going to have her Hefsek Tara, then, of course, Hefsek Tara is day zero, then Zainikiyim, which are day 1 through 7, and then after that is finished, she's going to go to the mikvah in the night, which is the beginning of night 8, after Zainikiyim. So if you think about it, in a very non-halachic sense, just for a frame of reference, for your own reference, it happens whenever day a woman does her Hefsek Tara, she goes to the mikvah on the secular calendar a week later that night. So let's say today is Thursday, woman does Hefsek Tara today, sometime before Shtia today, right now, does her Hefsek Tara. Then when is she going to go to the mikvah? Next Thursday night. Does it next Friday? Tomorrow, she'll go to the mikvah next Friday night. Now, of course, if you think about it halachically, that's already, Friday night is already Shabbos, and Thursday night is already Friday. So, leave yourselves out of the halachic universe for a minute. Just think practically. Whatever day a woman does have Saptara, it's easy to just think about. Whenever that Saptara is done, that's done on a Wednesday, let's say, the mitzvah will be a week later, Wednesday night. And the reason it works is logically. Wednesday is day zero, so day one, we have, just count with me, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday has to be over, that's day 7 of Zainatim. And then day 8, which is the beginning of Halachic Thursday, but we call still Wednesday night, she's going to end up going to the mikvah. Must be after night, after the Zainatim are over. How much after Zainatim are over? We're usually makel for a very minimum shear of, say, 20 minutes, let's say half hour, and even those that are machmir on Renatam's shtia, on Seis, let's say 72 minutes, 90 minutes for Shabbos, really don't need to be makir so much here. This is a chumrah that should be mamish when it's dark outside, and you can be more makir on the shir at Seis altogether. But there are different menhagim, different communities. For example, Breuers, usually they will not let a woman go into the mikvah until an hour after Shia. And then, even if you hold that you can wait less, you can't do anything about it because that's the community. A lot of larger communities are more makil. They don't really have a specific time because there's a range of psakim. But just know, you can definitely go in theory 20 minutes, half hour after Shtia, if it's up to you. But in some communities, you're up to the decision of what the communities decide. Right.
And there's a reason why it's done at night?
Yes, it has to be when the Zainatim are over. So by definition, it can't be during the Zainatim. It has to be after the 7 clean days are totally over. One of the 7 clean days over, only when it's night.
Go to the next morning?
So, in theory, it's a serious question we have. What about Tevil Bayom? Tevil Bayom. So, depends. In theory, the Gemara says we frown on Tevil Bayom because people might confuse day 8 with day 7. So, it's not the problem with day 8 per se, but the problem is they might confuse it. Oh, she's doing day 8. Maybe next time I can know day 7. Day 7, is, as we said, is a problem. So it depends on how much of a need there is. It depends on how much it's going to be necessary for her to do it. If, let's say, for the next 4 nights, she's a doctor, or she's a nurse, for the next 4 nights, she's going to be on pull the entire night, she can't get out to go to the mikvah, then it's a question which she has to speak to her rabbi about. Perhaps then Tevil Bayom is going to be mutter. But by and large, if it's going to be a situation where usually she won't be with her husband during the day anyway, so she only needs to go to the mikvah for Tashmish the next night, let her go the next night. Yes, her chatos might be taken off, but in theory, since she's going to go, if she's going to be able to go the next night, that's going to be a fine situation. Again, if it's going to be difficult then the shayla has to be yes.
So let's
heal on that. Let's heal on that. Never heal about yom, because we're concerned. Once you start talking about yom, you might confuse one day with another day. And this comes up very often. And
we actually was just covering this with Rabbi Tendler last week about the bungalow colony problem.
Oh, your Moshe Tshuva.
That during the summer, when women are at the bungalow colonies with their families and the husbands are still in the city working, then they're only home for the weekend, or in the bungalow colony for the weekend, then they want to be mekel to go to Lebuyon, but it's not so simple. And there's problems, rachbita.
Right, serious issues. What about stam? What about the problem, once you're mentioning it, problem of women going, let's say there's a pi kabbalah, there's a very big idea for a woman not to go to the mikveh when her husband's not in town. A pi kabbalah. But a pi nidla, there's totally nothing wrong. I usually advise people if they're, let's say a husband is away on a business trip and her alel tefillah is a certain night, she should go that night. Because in today's day and age, you never know when things are going to change. You thought he's staying in Oklahoma. All of a sudden he comes home tonight or the next day, you feel like a fool. You feel, you know, I should have gone. Why do I have to wait till tonight? Why bother? Things can change. There's nothing to lose. So if a person is a Kabbalist, they should be choshish for that. But by and large, there's no need to be machmir on that idea of pitabala. Women show to mikveh whenever the time is. And Professor Ray Tendler also mentioned the idea that if a mikveh in the bungalow colonies is only open Thursday night, Friday night, Sunday night, it's very hard for mikveh ladies. Meaning, a woman, if her well to be was Tuesday night, she should go Tuesday night. What's so bad? If the kids are jumping, she's the only one home to have to go crazy to get a babysitter when she to go. Yeah, that you don't have to go so far. Why should she go so crazy if she knows her husband won't be there? But by and large, if that's the night she should go, let her go that night. What do you lose? Again, we're not with Rebellum. There's no need for us to be choshish for that. There's a lot to gain and little to lose by going the right time, even though in theory there are those that would say it's inappropriate. We usually say she should go. Definitely she should go at the time. It's more convenient for the mitzvos in the summer. And stop. She never knows what the schedule of her husband's going to be. So definitely could I do that. When we say she should go to the mikvah at night, one out of every 7 nights, of course, is Lel Shabbos. And included in the idea of going to mikvah is Lel Shabbos. Women should go on Lel Shabbos as well. Sometimes this can pose some difficulties, such as if there's a lot of company or she's at her in-law's house and she can't necessarily just pop out for no reason. Often this can be circumvented. She can go to shul with her husband, and then instead of going to shul, she goes to the mikvah. It's important to know that there's absolutely no reason, by and large, for a woman not to go to the mikvah on Friday night. What if the kids are home and the husband went to shul? So sometimes the husband should not be in shul. If it's going to make a difference between Friday night and Matzah Shabbos, the husband should daven b'yichidus. Often that's not the case. Often it's not necessary for the husband to daven b'yichidus for one of a few reasons. Either she can go after he comes home, or although we're very machmir in tznius for tevila, if she needs to get one friend to come in order to have the tevila happen, that's not the worst thing in the world. She shouldn't be mafaisin it. She shouldn't say to everyone, "Hi, I'm going to the mikvah." But for one person to know, even that one person means even her husband's not going to know. Maybe that woman will tell her husband, "Listen, I have to disappear to help someone for half an hour." And the husband might understand that it's someone going to the mikvah, but as long as you don't know who it is, that's a bit chesed. In fact, someone told me recently that he was involved in a situation where he needed he was in shul, he needed to have someone watch his kids, and the person they asked was a couple that had not yet had a child. And subsequently, after that, they had a child. He doesn't know if there was a correlation, but he was just pointing out that there's nothing wrong with the chesed, and you never know what positive effects that chesed can have. So there's absolutely, unless there's a reason, let's say she can't, because the kids are going to be off the walls and they can't find anyone to babysit. Yeah, so she should be delayed. But by and large, we say, it is very, 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 very important for the wife to go to the mikvah when she can, the night that she can be tovil. Not only the situation that I mentioned before, that she doesn't know when her husband's coming home, but no matter what, a wife should go to the mikvah on the night of tevila. Even if it's hard, even if it's difficult, even if it means that she has to travel to a place which is not so convenient, go to the mikvah that night. Adam.
I'm really concerned about the temperature in the mikvah. I mean, I know that, again, just going over this with Rabbi Tendler, that there's a concern about the people running the mikvah not being so medactic on when Shabbos comes in and making sure that they're not cooking the water, making it too hot. So they could go, maybe if it's cold, but women don't go to cold mikvahs, and I'll always...
To your question, the minhag in Klal Yisrael is definitely to be makel to go into a warm, toasty warm mikvah on Lel Shabbos. It's hard to know why. Some communities are more machmir. In fact, there are some communities that are machmir, the women should go benesh mashos, dafka, even though they're usually not machmir benesh mashos, because they don't want the women to go into mikvah on Lel Shabbos mamish, in hot water, because that's an issur d'rabbanan to take a hot bath on Shabbos and perhaps even Yontif. So it's a good question why it is that it's mutter. It's a discussion in the post. Mishmar Shabbos Shafas has a long discussion about it, why it's mutter. The minhag in Paisho definitely is for a woman to do it. Some mikvahs try to make the water not as hot. But the Pashtus in Klal Yisrael, for whatever reason, we are making no difference between the temperature that night and any other time. Maybe they'll turn off the heater, so it won't be actively heated, but if it's a half hour later, it's still going to be nice and warm. Anyway, Ephraim.
And before a woman goes into mikvah, doesn't she like have to clean her
makeup? Oh, yeah, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. What does she do? Yes, we'll talk about the preparations in a minute. But it's imperative. In fact, we remember this as a story. Once there was a couple that was, I think, in Orlando. We know that it is a almost as important to going to the Catskills in the summer is to go to Orlando in January, midwinter break. There was a couple that was in Orlando, and they were going to be in Orlando. I don't think there's a mitzvah so close to Orlando, number one. Number two, I don't think there's a mitzvah at least close to Disney World. And number two, they were doing the economy deal. They were all going to be in the same room. The family was all going to be in the same room. So it was not going to be a situation where the husband and wife were going to be together. And Rav Neuberger, I think, still told them they should still drive 45 minutes to go to the mikvah there in Orlando, because when a woman is supposed to go, she should go. Whether it's just keeping the harchatos, still can be relaxed, and even though it's inconvenient for the family, a woman should go to the mikvah as soon as she can. If it's impossible, it's impossible. But it's definitely a strong imperative, a woman should go to the mikvah as soon as she can. Including Friday night. Which means Friday night, let's say she's by her parents, her mother has to realize where she's going, kafa. Again, for one person to realize, it's not the worst thing in the world. It definitely should not be delayed, if possible. Before a woman goes to the mikvah, she has to do certain preparations. We're going to only discuss some of the preparations because since it's not Nudea, the men, we're not going to go into all the details. That's important for each kala to learn in her kala class. But the general idea is that, number one, all chatzitzot, anything which can cause a problem, must be removed. Now, it's important to remember that chatzitza, the issues of chatzitza can sometimes cause a person to be a little bit more nervous than usual. If a person has a specific personality who's more prone to being nervous, we mentioned sometimes that comes out in Taras Mishpacha in various ways, maybe with Beditos or with Harchatos. But specifically, another way that it can come out is as far as Chatzitzos are concerned. It's important to keep in mind the frame of reference. The only thing which is Asur min HaTorah is Rubo U'Machbid. That means it has to be something in most of her body that you don't want. Let's say, for example, she really thinks it's really fun to have a big red blotch on her entire body. She wants to paint her body red. It's not so pasha that it would be chatzitza, even though it's rubo, it's the entire body. Perhaps that's not considered mapid, she wants it there. It's a discussion, maybe that's considered mapid anyway, since she was after wants it, it's not just she's ignoring it. But if she has something which is on only part of her body, or that she doesn't care about, that is going to be a mutter min HaTorah. Midrabanan, Chazal or Machmir, either Rubo or Machbid. I'm sorry. Either Rubo or Machbid. One or the other. All you need is Rubo or Machbid. So if it's Rubo, even though you don't care about it, or it's your Machbid and it's a small part of the body, that's okay. That's a problem. The Ramah writes, we try to be Machmir not only for that, we try to be Machmir even for Miyot She'eno Machbid. The other extreme, not rubo u'machbid, not one or the other, but it's missing both. It's miyot and eno machbid. The Ramah says we still try to get rid of any chatzitza. But that is a chumrah, which means worst comes to worst. Woman goes to the mikvah and comes back, she finds, oh yeah, I had something on my hand that I didn't take off. I think it was there before the mikvah. Mutter or asr, very often, it's mutter lechatzil even for her to go into that. Aside from the minhag, the Ramah says to be machmir, because it's miyot, she didn't notice it. When she took a shower, she took a bath, she didn't notice it altogether. Miyot, she'ena machmir, don't go crazy over it. So yes, we keep that minhag very, very strongly. We're very committed to that minhag. We try to get rid of everything that we can. But it's important to keep in mind, min HaTorah, it's only rubo u'machmir. Midrabanan, it's either miyot, even miyot, if you're machmir, or rubo she'ena machmir. But miyot, she'ena machmir, a tiny bit that you don't really care about, is mutter midrabanan even. It's a minhag to be machmir, but that should not cause any tense feeling within a person.
So let's say she has a nail polish.
Yeah, so that has to be removed. That's what I was saying before. That might be considered a case of machmir. You actually want it there, perhaps. It's a discussion the Pashim have. Maybe if it's nail polish, which is really the way it should be, not chipping at all, maybe that's okay. Once it starts chipping, you don't really want it to. You want to get it off. It's a discussion. But b'derech klal, a woman should l'chatchila get rid of all nail polish, even cut her nails. It's a very strong minhag, which borders on halacha. She should cut her nails as well before going to the mikveh. Do you have anything? What about a case of a wound? She has some sort of stab, some sort of bandage she can't take off. Dental work, a broken bone, ear infection. These are all shilas cases that are very prone to shilas. Different discussions in the post about what do you do in such a situation. It might be the minhag alone, might be even more than that. She actually wants something in her ear that's miyut hamakud. What does she do with that? Very serious discussions. The postum, all very fertile ground for shilas. But Ephraim, for sure, nail polish definitely takes off the chatzila. But the Eved, if it's perfect nail polish, maybe it's okay because she doesn't really care.
Makbid means she doesn't want it.
That's a discussion. Does makbid mean she doesn't want it there or she really wants it the way it is? That's a discussion. Mm. Postum have. It's also a discussion in the postum.
And in terms of ruba, like how much is the, has to be, like, what's the.
Most of one's body. Which almost is almost nothing. It's going to be, you have a blotch of paint on most of one's body. It's hard to imagine. Which means, but there are clouds. She's definitely tovel. Her tefillos are kamen ha-torah. The reason I mentioned is that we discussed last time. Sometimes the reason people are so nervous about taras mishpachah is because they think they're bordering on the isur kareis chas v'shalom. It's very, 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 very hard to do something in taras mishpachah which is going to result in isur kareis. Short of a woman being with her husband when she's actually seeing Dan. Almost anything short of that is not going to result in Issur Kareis anyway. So it's just important to realize that. Because there's some of the whole idea of Nida itself is a Chumrah, that we're Machbid nowadays. A woman needs to have Zayin Nikiyim as a Chumrah, that's only a Chumrah which applies for Zava. And there are many, many things that are added that are Chumrahs, which are very important to keep. But they're not, their violation will not, Chas V'Shalom, cause any Issur Kareis whatsoever. Well, she needs to go to the mikveh. Huh? She still needs to go to the mikveh.
But they don't have chorus
in that? If it's Zayin Nikiyim and she has not gone to the mikveh yet, they would be.
They would be.
Yeah, but in most situations, they're not going to go to the. She's not going to be together with her husband before going to the mikveh. Mm-hmm. She would do it the wrong day. She counts only 5 days instead of 7 days. She did something else. She went to the mikveh. By and large, as long as she has a period, goes to the mikveh. But there are cloud, the Issur Kareis is removed, so she shouldn't be so tense. Again, not Chas V'Shalom, she should be makel at all. There's not room for any reason to be makel. These are very, very, very important halachos. But I'm just addressing the issue of people being so tense. Most mistakes made in Hilchos Nida, in fact, 99.99% mistakes that are made in Hilchos Nida will not Chas V'Shalom result in an Issur Kareis anyway. The most important preparations for mikvah, aside from cutting those nails, and getting rid of chatzitzos, is taking a bath or a shower. Ideally a bath. There's nothing like a bath to remove anything which is stuck on, extra parts of stabs, anything which is extra, which is left on a person's body. A bath removes very well. If a person has no choice, a person can take a shower too, if necessary. The Shulchan Aruch tells us the most ideal way for this to take place is to go from day to night. Some Rishonim say it's better to have the shower or the bath during the day. Others say at night. We try to do both. But Lamaisa, for most of a person's life, it's an impossibility. Think about it now. Let's say winter. Night comes around 4:30. That means any person that's doing anything during the day, if she's in school or working or watching kids, she can't take a bath from 4 to 5 in the middle of the day. So in theory, it's always best to do it day to night. But for the other, either day or night is okay. And she should ideally take a bath or a shower close to going to the mikveh. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that if she has a situation, let's say 3 day yantif, she's going to do motzai 3 day yantif. She can, if necessary, take it erev 3 day yantif, which means let's say she takes it on Wednesday. She has the Shabbos is the yantif is. Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. So she can take it on Thursday morning. Erev yantif, she's allowed to take it, even though it's going to be that it's only 3 days later. By and large, if it's not a yantif halachic situation, she has to take it the day before she goes, that night. But if there's a halachic reason, she's even allowed to take it then. But as a rule of thumb, since people take so many showers nowadays, it's always best if she can go into the mikveh, take a shower quickly in the mikveh again. Even if she takes it before 3 day yantif, why not take a shower in the mikveh right before, get rid of any chatzitzos. And included in the bath, even more important than the bath or shower, is that a woman has to carefully comb her home, comb her hair, get rid of anything in her hair, and look at her body, make sure there's no chatzitzos. This concludes the part of our discussion, which details the way of becoming tahora, zaynikim, and going to tefillah. Now we're going to discuss the harchatos. All the harchatos are dinim midrabbanim, which are meant to help a husband and wife remember not to chas v'shalom fall in to the prohibition of being together when she's in Eden. They're chumras midrabbanim, which Chazal added to help a person remember the strict nature of Hilchos Nidah. And sometimes it might seem a little strange. It might seem strange to a person. You know, I trust myself. I know you can't eat any Yom Kippur. Mr. Karis, I don't need any Yom Kippur. I don't need any Harchatos Midrabanan to make me more makbid on Hilchos Nidah. Two Yisodos. Number one, there was once a man who went to the Grand Canyon and he took gorgeous pictures. He put them up on Picasa, sent them out around on Facebook. Gorgeous pictures of the Grand Canyon. Everyone oohed and aahed. Wow, what pictures this person took. Then 2 years later, the man came to the Grand Canyon again, starts focusing his digital camera, getting ready to take pictures, starts walking to the Grand Canyon, and all of a sudden feels something against his leg. Looks down, and he realizes he's up against a gate. He's fuming mad, because he sees with the gate there, he can't get the right angle to take a picture of the Grand Canyon. And he runs to the guard, to the trooper, and says to him, "What's going on here? What is this?" He said, "I'm sorry, sir, that's a gate." "Excuse me? Why did you put a gate up?" He said, "Well, we put up a gate so people don't fall down." "So the gate so people don't fall down? You know, I was here 2 years ago and I took the most gorgeous pictures. I'm still here, I didn't fall down." He said, "Sir, obviously, we didn't put the gate up for people that didn't fall down. We put them because they're people that did." And that's a klal we have in general for Chumras Midrabanan. It's not only because, God forbid, one person is going to fall in, but we need it for the tzibur because there are others that might be nechshol chas v'shalom. It's important to have the dinim in place. Even though a person might trust himself or herself, it's important for the tzibur to have these dinim. But aside from that, the halacha is, what if there's a woman who's in this room alone and she is in solitary confinement. No one's allowed in, no one's allowed out. There's a guard at the door making sure that no one comes in and no one comes out. And all of a sudden, the woman becomes pregnant. Who do we say is the father of that baby? Rov Vilasachar Abal? We say the husband, her husband. Her husband might be in Timbuktu and he was watched for by himself. No one, everyone knows he didn't leave. And we know that there's no way anyone got into this room, says the Gemara. Ein apotropos la'arayos. There's never a good enough watchman when it comes to sexuality. There's such a drive, you can never have a good enough watchman. We know this perhaps from Hilchos Yichud. There's more than average chumras for Hilchos Yichud. Ein apotropos la'arayos. There's never a good enough watchman for arayos. And therefore, even though a person thinks, you know what, come on, I don't need these chumras midrabanan, chas v'shalom. Ein apotropos la'arayos. You never know. Chazal understood people more than they understand themselves. You never know the situation. Sometimes it's important to have these chumras in place to make sure you don't chas v'shalom forget the chumra of nida, because we're dealing with an issue of sexuality. What are the chumras that exist? Number one, the most basic one, is that husband and wife, when she's in nida, are not allowed to touch each other. They can't touch. This means touching more of a loving type of touching, hugging, kissing, which might be asur min haTorah, or even just not derech chiba, which is asur midrabanan. Even by means of another object, he can't scratch her back with a back scratcher, can't tap her with a ruler. All that is asur. That's harchaka number one.
Not even with the hand, but like with the
right. Let's say he wants to tap her like this. He can't do it with the sefer either. Right? No. Mm-hmm. It's all touching is asur, and we understand why. It can come chas v'shalom to something worse. The next group of harchatos are harchatos which deal with meals. And meals, Rabbi Forst points out in his Hakdamah, this area of harchatos, in his beautiful two-volume work on Hilchos Nidah, published by Artscroll, that meals nowadays are really not what they used to be. And I would say, when the Earl of Sandwich invented the sandwich, and with that, fast food only came, was only natural to come in sometime later, then the idea of meals became hapshat. Everything's fast. But in theory, meals could be a time of intimacy. Meals could be a time of connection. So Chazal said there's certain times, certain situations during meals we need to remind the husband and wife of the chomer isonida, specifically during mealtime. There are a few halachos we're going to see that apply specifically during the meal. Number one, the halacha is that a woman and her husband who are, when she's in Ida, are not allowed to eat together on the same table. They can't eat together at the same table. So what do? The exact same halacha, for those that have been learning Yerideya, that a man and his friend that are eating milk and fleish do at the same table. What does one of them do? Put down a placemat, or a tablecloth, or some sort of hefsek. All those work for basar b'chalav, they also work for nida. A woman is allowed, a husband and wife can have one placemat. They don't even both need to have placemats. They can have placemats, they can have some sort of heker. Any heker that they have is going to be good, whether it's something which is high, let's say a bottle of apple juice, or perhaps a cell phone. The one caveat is that it has to be something that they're not using during the meal. So if he's recording, if he's going to be listening to his cell phone calls every second during the meal, picks it up, then it's hard to say that's considered a heker because that's really being used during the meal. But let's say they're drinking apple juice during this meal, and they have orange juice in the fridge also. Orange juice can be brought to the table even though it doesn't look like a heker. If they're not using the orange juice, that's a good enough heker. If they decide they want to use orange juice, that's a problem. But as long as they're not using it, that is a good enough heker. All those are necessary. I do not know of anyone that discusses exactly how much between the husband and wife they have to be. They have to be mounted between them like this. Can they be on the side? 2 feet away if someone doesn't work. But anything which is reasonably in their area is a good enough heker to separate the husband and wife. This applies even if the husband and wife are with others. Let's say husband and wife are sitting at the table and there are kids that are around. Not if the kids are eating there. Once people eat at the same meal, there's no need to have this heker anymore. Once other people are at the meal. But if the husband and wife are eating at their parents' home and they just went to get a bite to eat, they brought from takeout, so they got some fast food and their parents are home, that's not good enough because they're not eating with them. If the parents sit down for the meal, that's a different story. But if they're just home, that is not good enough. Oh, but fast food, by definition, usually has its own simple solution. Fast food comes in a brown bag. Brown paper bag. So if he just takes the brown paper bag and unwraps it and puts it down, he's eating on it, there's your heker. That's fine. So it's very common to have ways of using a heker which no one notices at all as a heker. That's fine, but you need a heker. Next halacha dealing with meals is that she is not allowed to serve him directly. She can't serve him in the normal way, as she would when she's not in Nida. There's a bit of machlokas apostim, but we presume this applies to either part of serving, which is the actual pouring or serving. For example, she wants to take the chicken out of the plate and put it on his plate in the kitchen. If he's sitting in the kitchen also, he shouldn't watch her put the chicken on the plate. Alternatively, she should not take the chicken from the kitchen and bring it right to him and put it down on the table in front of him. Even though this is a discussion of the post, which one is really the emphasis, we're trying to be mouthful for both. Either pouring or either portioning out or serving. But shalom lefanim is mutter. If he doesn't see it, it's okay. So if he's in the dining room and she's in the kitchen, even though he knows she's putting the chicken on the plate, that's okay. Alternatively, if they're in a kitchen and she's pouring it, she's taking it out from the stove, but she's blocking him with her body because he can't see because she's in front of the stove, that's also okay. Even though he knows it's going, he saw the plate go there without chicken on it, comes out of her hand with chicken on it, as long as he doesn't see it, that's also okay. Rav Avadia Yosef has a big kiddush here. He points out, which seems to be the pashut pshat in the poskim, that this whole chumra only applies to beverages. Only applies to coffee, tea, to things you drink. Does not apply to food whatsoever. However, the standard approach in the postum seems to be the shach, and the standard approach in the postum is that it applies to both food and drink. How do you get around it? How could the wife serve her husband? So number one is if she doesn't see. But number two is if she does it with any type of shinun. Shinun means her left hand. Number two, she does it in a way which is not directly in front of him. It's just a little bit away. That's also okay. It goes without saying, if she's bringing a serving plate to the table, which is for everyone, and she's putting it in front of him, that's okay, because that's not really serving him directly. That's just a serving plate. And apart from discuss, and this applies more to food than to drink, what if the beverage is not totally finished? Let's say coffee that you don't need to add milk to. That's the discussion the postman has. How often, how much do we say is considered serving if Lamaisa he needs to add a little bit to it? But usually there's no need to enter that discussion in the postman, because once she does it with the shinoi, just her left hand, that's okay. If she puts it a little bit far from him, that's okay. There's nothing more to discuss. Fine.
Does this go both ways? Can he
serve? No, it's really only for her to him.
Oh,
that's more kiruv das, more of a connection. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to him. Next din that deals with specifically meals is he's not allowed to send her a toast of wine. He can send her a cup of wine or, of course, grape juice. That's more of an intimate type of beverage. The most common time this comes up, of course, is when? Kiddush. Toast of Rachel, he sends her Kiddush. What do you do for Kiddush? If he can't send her a toast, that means he can't even give his kids, hey, do this to Ima, do this to Mami, because he can't send her a cup of wine. What do? So a few different approaches. The non-germy approach is he just takes a drink of his cup and then passes the cup around. Everyone drinks from the cup, so it gets to her. That's okay, because it's not so IAI as far as the Germans are concerned. But as far as the family, that's not to her. That's to the whole family. That's fine. In a more an American approach is that he'll drink from the cup, then pour into those little cups. Whether you pour machlokes ha-wedding gifts. If you get the fancy schmancy fountain wedding gift, you pour it into that fountain and it goes into all the little cups by itself. Or you do it the old-fashioned way, you pour into the little cups by themselves. If you pass the cups around, then she takes one of the cups. That's not really sending her a toast of bracha. That's not sending her a toast of wine. That's just giving her some of the kiddush. But if she is sitting next to him, there's another solution. The solution is that if he picks up the wine and puts it back down right where he took it from, there's no concern. We know by definition, before he makes kiddush, the cup of wine was somewhere. If he picks it up, if let's say she's sitting here and he had it in front of him, drinks it and puts it down here, that's effectively sending her a toast of bracha. But if he had it somewhere between them to start off with, pours the wine, makes kiddush, and puts it right back down there, how can you say he sent her something? He put it back down right where he took it from. That's not really sending her anything. So that's what I usually advise people to do with chatchila for the whole month. Why do people have to know what's going on? He should always have the cup of wine, if they sit next to each other, between them, pour the wine, pick it up, put it down, and there's nothing to talk about. Then it's fine. What if she's sitting on the other side of the table? That's not going to work. He picks it up, puts it right down, and she has to come. She has to drink. People know what's going on. That's not right. Then he has to do one of the other cups. But if she's sitting next to him, that's a simple way of doing it. Parenthetically, as far as Hilchos Kel Shebracha are concerned, there's no reason for her to drink from his toast specifically. Halachically, she's just as permitted. This exact same milah, the Gemara says, for her to drink from any wine or grape juice on the table at the same time without him pouring into her. Meaning, let's say, in theory, it's an announcement I make when people come to my house for Shabbos, that in Halacha, there's no difference between drinking from a Kel Shebracha or any other wine or grape juice on the table. So people are out, let's say I'm making Kiddush on Cabernet. But you don't like Cabernet, you like white Zinfandel. So you pour some white Zinfandel for yourself. Not enough to make a shear for Kiddush necessarily. Just pour some. When I drink my Cabernet, you drink the white Zinfandel. And that's exactly the same Chaviva Sabracha as it would be for drinking Kiddush. So the whole idea doesn't really need to start altogether. You're allowed to have each person have their own wine in front of them. They don't need to pass or anything. But if you're the passing type, this is one of the ways to do the passing.
What's the reason behind passing?
It shows a certain level of connection. Also, it's only for wine and grape juice. Orange juice is okay to pass to her, but wine is more of a friendly type of drink. We avoid it. Next, harchaka is eating leftovers. He's not allowed to eat her leftovers. They go to a restaurant, and to Darko, they always make fun of the fact that they should have woman-sized portions, because women eat half what the portion size is in restaurants, even in today's restaurants where the serving sizes are small. So the woman has leftovers. He is not allowed to eat her leftovers. Except with one of the following caveats. What if you change the leftovers to a different plate? That's okay. Then it's no longer considered her leftovers. Another case. Let's say someone eats in between. She eats some, gives some to the her child, then he eats. That's not considered a problem. Number three, if she leaves. If she leaves, even if the leftovers are in the exact same plate, the place she was sitting even, then she's allowed. He's allowed to eat it. And then once she comes back, there's no need for him to stop. So in theory, if they wanted to, she could give him the plate. She could get up, go away for a second. He can start eating, then she can come back, and that's okay because once she comes back, there's no need for him to stop once he already started eating. What's considered leftovers? Rav Moshe writes that even leftovers have to be qualified. Let's say they order chicken. Chicken comes with a side dish. Side dish French fries. Now, most women are not going to want to eat the French fries because it's not so healthy. And the husbands don't mind eating the French fries so much. So the woman eats the chicken, eats the salad, and the husband wants the French fries. So Rav Moshe seems to say that's not even considered leftovers because that's a separate thing. It happens to be on the same plate. But that's not leftovers. Leftovers means the other piece of chicken. They have a whole quarter chicken. She eats one part of the chicken. He eats the other part of the chicken. That's leftovers. Leftovers is not the French fries. If she had no French fries, that's not leftovers. That's something else that happened to be on her plate as well. There's no problem with that whatsoever. The next group of Harkot we're going to discuss deals with beds and chairs. Number one, perhaps the most famous halacha of husband and wife in bedroom settings is that when a woman is a nida, husband and wife are not allowed to be in the same bed together. They need to have separate beds. Which means, the bare minimum, that any part of one bed should not touch any part of another bed when they're sleeping. When they're awake, when they're not in the beds can be together. But when they're sleeping, her bedspread or her blanket should not extend over and touch his. That's considered one bed. It goes without saying that if the beds are, let's say there's nothing on the beds, no blankets or sheets on the bed, so they can have them just an inch apart, they're not touching, but it's easy to roll from one to the other, then that's really considered one bed. You can roll from one to the other without realizing in the middle of the night. That's not correct. So you have to do the roll test. If you can fall between and he falls down and hurts himself, that's considered separate. But if you can roll straight, not mustabra, say that's considered two beds. Included in that are beds connected to the same headboard. If one bed is connected to a headboard and screwed in, and the other bed is connected to the headboard and screwed in, that's really one bed, even though they're separate from one another. So, which is why in a frum family, if they want to have a headboard, they should have a headboard which is not screwed in. But if they have it connected, that's really one unit, it's a bed. This halakha sometimes makes it a little bit sticky to set up a person's bedroom. How do you set up your bedroom? If Lamaisa, you keep the beds together and then you move them apart during the times of the month that the woman is in nida, then if someone comes into the bedroom, they're going to realize what's going on in the couple's private life, which is not so ideal. So one answer is, yeah, they can have it separate at night and move it together during the day. That's one option, if they like. But what I often tell people is that it's more polite, if their apartment can have this, to buy beds that are larger size. In fact, there's even a name, there are furniture companies in Brooklyn that sell what they call frum beds, beds that are bigger sized, which means during the times of the month that the husband and wife are permissible to one another, they can use the same bed if they like. And during the times of the month that they are not, they have two separate beds, there's always going to be something between the beds. This way, if they're permissible, they can use the same bed if they like, or have different beds, that's up to them. But the exact way the room is set up always stays the same. It's up to them to decide what's going on when they go to sleep. But if there are two beds which are smaller beds, they want to push together during times of the month, they could be together. And separate when they're not, sometimes a little sticky, people might figure out what's going on. If they have the same set, if they have bigger beds, which they could use together if they wanted, or even keep separate, there's room for both of them in the same bed if they'd like, and have some sort of something which is always separated, then they have a perfect scenario which doesn't change whatever time of month that is. So it's nothing that's up to you, it's a personal decision, but just know that it exists. Such an extent, there are some companies that have what they call frum beds. In the secular world, they have full beds. Full beds are also somewhere between queen and twin. The average size bed is twin, and then queen is bigger. Full is somewhere between that. But frum size beds are meant, I think, for people that have more of an apartment lifestyle, so they can't fit a full bed to full beds, but they have something which is bigger. That's also okay, as long as it's something which is going to be comfortable to the couple. that's just a practical bit of advice, but it's good that you know that. Included in the halachos of beds is that even sitting on a bed is sometimes viewed as something which is more intimate. He's not allowed to sit in her bed anytime that she's in the same city. Even if she's not home, he can't sit in her bed. If she's out of town, he's allowed to. But he can't sit and certainly not sleep in her bed if she's in the city. Similarly, she can't sit in his bed, but there's a leniency. Only b'fanav. If he's downstairs and certainly not home, she's allowed to take a rest and certainly sleep, and certainly sit on his bed. So it's a similar idea, but one is, for the man, it's as long as she's in the city. For the wife, it's as long as he's not there. Making beds is also viewed as something which is intimate. She's not allowed to make his bed b'fanav, in front of him. If he knows, if he's there and he knows it's happening, but he doesn't see it, that's also okay. But he can't see her make his bed. Of course, for Shalom Bayis, who should make the beds? He should make them anyway. That's great, so therefore there's nothing to talk about. But in theory, on the off chance she's making the bed, that she should make it in a way that he can't see that she's doing it. Related to beds, we have some harachotas that also apply to chairs. Chairs are usually freestanding, but if there's anything which is big enough for two people, if it's going to be a case where she feels his weight and he feels her weight, they're not allowed to be on that together. For example, a bench. If they're on a bench which is not really connected to the ground, so she sits down, she feels him, it moves together. Seesaw, that's a problem. They can't feel each other's weight. A couch. What if they sit down on a couch and they sit on the same cushion? Even though they're not touching one another, that's still a problem. She's sitting down, he's sitting down, they're going to feel each other's weight. What if two different cushions? That's already too far. She sits down on this cushion, he sits down on that cushion, and that cushion touch each other, and they feel each other's weight. That's already too far, that's not a problem. But if it's a case where they feel each other's weight, that indeed is a problem. It goes without saying, then a swing. If you have a swing for adults, they can't swing together because the swing moves, that's a problem. However, if someone is between them, then it's mutter. So if they have, let's say, a child with them on the swing, between the two of them, that's okay. Huadin, rowboating. What if they want to go rowboating? So rowboating is a big problem if she's an Ida, if it's just him and her. Because if you step into the rowboat, you feel each other's weight mamish. But if they have kids, if there's a kid or more than one kid in the rowboat, that's okay. Because that's going to be with someone else, there's no problem. Murphy's Law has it sometimes, the following situation takes place. What if husband and wife go to a wedding, they have a compact car, go to a wedding, and a couple asks them for a ride back. So the couple says, the couple asks for a ride back, of course they say, sure, please come back with us. And the couple knows they're Anida, she's Anida, but Lamaisa, she will sit on one side of the back, he'll sit on the other side of the back, they won't touch each other, there's no problem. All of a sudden, as they're about to leave, some other man asks for a ride back. So how do they sit in the back? Is it going to be other man, then wife, then her husband? No. It's going to be man, man, wife, let's say. In the compact car, they're stuck. So, husband, and then the other man. I'm sorry, other man, then husband and wife are next to each other. So, what do they do in such a situation? So the husband and wife should make sure not to touch each other, but every time the car moves, they'll feel each other's weight, they're sitting on the same bench. So Rav Moshe is the truth here. Rav Moshe writes, no. When they're sitting on the same bench in the car, that's not they don't feel each other's weight, they feel the car moving. So in a car, even if they're next to each other, we are makdol. They have to be makdol not to touch each other. When the car is moving, they should try to turn away from each other rather than turn to each other and to bump into each other as best as they can. But there's no concern there of having a safsal misnadnei, having the connection of the two things. In fact, some people point out, it's very helpful that many women, it's in vogue for women to bring pocketbooks or purses to the weddings. Because worse comes to worse, if they're stuck together in a car in the back and they're smushed together, she should just put her pocketbook down between the two of them. And at least, even if they're pressing up against one another, they're both pressing up against the pocketbook. That's not an ideal situation, but b'shash and b'chach like this, at least they're not touching each other, and we're not makbid on this safsal misnadnei. Along the lines of this idea, there's a Ramah, which is very ambiguous. The Ramah seems to say that a husband and wife should not go in a wagon together to a far off place. And there's a machlokes of what the Rama means. Some say all the Rama means is they shouldn't go in a wagon because the wagon is so rickety they're going to feel each other's weight. Others say what they think the Rama means is that they shouldn't go together for a shpatzir, on a date which is more an intimate setting. They shouldn't go to the gardens, go to the fruit orchards, and just have a romantic date when she's in Eden. So it's machlokes how to read the Ramah. Some say there's nothing wrong with that. Others say that it's not correct because that's what the Ramah means. So in each situation, it depends. What's not included is something a person would do normally. Let's say a person would go to a non-intimate place. There's no concern. But if it's more an intimate situation, just know to ask Rishayim in such a situation, Asel Harav, is that a concern or not? If it's not intimate, there's nothing to talk about. If it's more of an intimate case, let's say it's a hike. Might depend. If the hike is a case where they both need exercise, then it's okay. But if it's a hike, they're just going for the more romantic nature of the hike, they themselves, that might be included in this Ramah, who does not recommend such a situation. Again, it's an ambiguous area in the Ramah, something which is important to ask. It seems that even though it's only Ramah, it doesn't seem to be discussed. Mechaber doesn't discuss it, but it seems that it should apply both ways as well.
Is Stam to keep going on a trip?
Yeah, Stam, right. Some postmen say, this is an idea which really has to be qualified more. If it's something he'll do with his friend, he can do it with his wife. If it's something that he does just with her, then not. Now, if you think about it, people would go on hikes with their friends too. So you have to ask yourself exactly where do you draw the line. But if it's non-romantic, then it's okay. And I think that's why we mentioned before, dates, for sure. Dating during Hakatos, dating is very important. Dating during Nida, that's not a problem. For a husband to spend time with his wife is very important. It's even more important during Nida sometimes than during not Nida, because it's important for the husband and wife to connect. Wives sometimes feel their husbands leave them because of the Hakatos, they don't necessarily focus on them, which is terrible. They have to focus on them, they just have to not in an intimate way. But there's nothing wrong with being going on dates. In fact, dating is encouraged during the time that a woman is in Eden. So it's not dates. Dates are not by definition intimate. Going to a restaurant is not necessarily intimate. It means more of an intimate situation might be included. The next harchata is that he's not allowed to stare at a place which is normally covered in her body. So first of all, says Ravadia, that means staring. If he happens to see it as a casual glance, that's not included, which means, let's say, they both want to get dressed in the same bedroom, that would be okay. He shouldn't stare at her body, but if it happens to be out of the corner of his eye, he notices something which is usually covered, that's not a concern. That's not l'staka, that's not focusing on. Rav Moshe here is an unbelievable kula. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, what then with hair? Hair, if a dina, should be covered outside the house, but many women, rightfully so, leave it uncovered inside the house. Even though there's a chumrah in the Gemara, people sometimes leave hair covered inside the house. Rav Moshe writes in several tshuvos, there's no need to cover hair inside the house. So inside the house, the hair is uncovered. Outside is covered. Is that considered makom mechusar or not? Is that a place which is normally covered? Says Rav Moshe, no. If it's a place which is only covered when she goes outside, but not inside, that's not included in this harchaka. This harchaka only means it's a place which she normally covers. So a woman is allowed to walk around with her hair uncovered in front of her husband when she's in Eden. Based upon that, Rav Moshe says, Rav Willard, the same thing applies to any other part of the body. Let's say a woman usually wears t-shirts, short sleeves, not outside the house, because that's not sanua, but inside the house she's going to wear t-shirts. She keeps half her shoulder, she has cap sleeves or t-shirts, which is going to show way up above the elbow that she usually is not going to wear outside. Mutter Rasser? Mutter, same thing. Since that's something which is normally covered only outside the house, but not inside the house, there's no problem whatsoever. Where do you draw the line? The way Rav Willard says, depends. Extremities, arms and legs, are subjective. If she always wears shorts when she's in Ida, if she always wears shorts at home, sometimes it's one of the normal things she'll walk around that she can even wear when she's in Ida, even though it's going to go above her knees and that's not the way she would normally walk around outside. But tank tops, let's say, which are going to show part of her body, which is part of the torso, that's not part of the actual extremities. That's the torso. That's already a problem. So we can't say, oh, she wears tank tops every day, it's much when she's in Ida. That's objective error. That's a problem. Extremities, arms and legs, if it's a part of the body that she normally keeps uncovered inside the house, or it's within the realm of normal, that is okay, even though she'll never walk outside like that at all. Which means, in theory, when a woman gets married, often women, when they're, let's say, at home, are not going to walk around in the shorts anyway. If their fathers, their brothers are around, they feel funny wearing shorts. But let's say she decides she wants to wear shorts at home sometimes, it's part of the way she'll walk around. She can start doing that, and then she can wear it during Nida as well. There's no concern. The last of the Harfatos that we're going to discuss is the idea of passing. Passing is a quote from Rashi. You can't pass something from one to another. You can't pass it from her hand to his, from his hand to her hand, or the other way around. And this is not quoted in the Gemara, but it's a chumra that we know Rashi himself did. Rashi was makbid not to give the key to his wife from his hand to her hand when she's in either. Included in passing is even throwing, meaning he can't throw it from her to him directly. Says the Pesach Teshuva, what if he throws it up? He throws it up and it lands down to her. That's okay, because then it's not really throwing to her, it's throwing up, and she happens to get gravity passing it to her. So it depends. If you throw almost everything you throw is going to go in a little bit of an arc. Obviously, that's not considered throwing down, but if he throws it up, if she gets it, that's okay. Such a kula is fine. To throw it to her in an upward direction. But to pass it to her, even throw it to her, ideally is not permitted. Including that, of course, is carrying one big object. Let's say they want to carry a gemara together or a couch together. Although there are both of them that are made on such a situation, it's better not to do that also. That's even worse than passing. That's something which is big. If necessary, there are those that are made. But if they want to move this table, it's better for them not to do it together. That's an extension of passing. They're mamish holding it together. There's a kula, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, as far as a baby, once a baby is already old enough to sort of move its body, you're allowed to pass a baby from one to another. Because a baby, when it's going to be passed, is not just going to be dead weight. A baby is going to move itself. We say in Hilchos Shabbos, Chai no seis atzmo. A baby sort of carries itself. It makes itself easier to hold. So the baby is going to sort of reach out for another person or make itself maneuver to go from one to another. That's not considered passing. That is mutter. What about the first few months of the baby? So here we have Machlokes Apostim. Rav Willard is a famous kula. Rav Willard is makil that during the first few months of a baby's life, baby is considered a chola. You're allowed to pass the baby from husband to wife and wife to husband, even if she's a nida. It's not right. You put the baby down, the baby chashom can fall. That's mutter. However, that's not quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Others disagree. Others say that a person is not allowed to pass the baby, which means the husband has to put the baby down, and then the wife has to pick it up. Of course, she's allowed to put her hands close to it, so she doesn't. Let's say he puts it on the bed, and she'll catch the baby right away. But the standard approach is that it's not mutter, except when the baby can already move himself. What Rav Willard says is that for the first few months, the baby is a chola. Once the baby is no longer a chola, the baby is already going to move himself. So you're always allowed to pass the baby from one to another. But that's Rav Willard's own chiddush. Others don't necessarily hold that. That's the case. Again, I'm going to say, we'll continue with the last of the business next week, and then go on to Vestos.